So on today's podcast, I speak with Charlie Rowe, the Community Outreach Manager for Carbal Medical Services in Toowoomba, Queensland. We talk about his Strong Fathers, Strong Families program, which is a holistic, culturally strong model that promotes the important role of dads, grandfathers, uncles, and carers, helping them strive to be healthy role models and engage in their children's lives. This program is having a big impact on keeping men out of jail and reducing reoffending risk. We talk about change behaviour strategies for DV perpetrators, the importance of role modelling and cultural education in the community.
Indigenous Health Med Talks with Dr. Danielle Arabina, yarning with innovators, trailblazers and community leaders in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health and medicine. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised that this podcast may contain the voices of persons now deceased. We would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians, Yuggera and Turrbal people, from where Dr. Danielle is broadcasting, and extend our acknowledgement to the elders past and present of all our listeners.
Hello there, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. Today we're speaking to Charlie Rowe, who's a cultural mentor for GPTQ, and he's currently working as the Community Outreach Manager for Carbal, which is one of our Aboriginal medical services up in the Darling Downs. So, Charlie, welcome to the show. Tell us a bit about who you are, who's your mob, and what you've been up to.
Hi, Danielle. Like you said, my name is Charlie Rowe. I'm a proud Kamilaroi man from a little mission called Toomala, over in the New South Wales. I am the Community Outreach Manager here in Toowoomba. I've been working for Carbal for the last 7 years, and in that time I've developed a program that I mainly concentrate on, and that's the Strong Fathers, Strong Families program.
Mm-hmm. So could you tell us a little bit about that program? I've been hearing some good things about it.
Yeah, it the program started as a pilot program in 2011. It was funded for 3 years to 2014. I come into the role in 2012 and developed a program where we get all the men together and we actually go through a booklet discussing roles of dads, communication, a bit of confidence, a lot on stress and anger and behaviours and personal growth.
Yeah, because I've spoken with a couple of guests over the last couple of podcasts around the role of father, and I think it's really important because when women are, you know, transitioning into motherhood, obviously being pregnant, there's a lot of attention drawn to that. Whereas I think with men, they're equally as important, but sometimes that gets a little bit lost. And I think also a lot of men, perhaps, you know, particularly in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, might have that loss of role model.
They do, yeah, they do. And I find that a lot with a lot of the men that come through the program, Danielle, is that some of the questions is around that role model and who they saw as a role model growing up as a child.
Yes.
And a lot of them say, you know, there's not a lot that says their own father, to be quite honest. So it's usually their grandmother or grandfather or uncle or auntie or something like that. They don't realise the importance of when mum's pregnant that, you know, baby can hear voices and sounds while still in mum's tummy. So a lot of people say, you know, you connect or bond with your child once they're born. Well, I tell the blokes, no, you know, you need to talk to baby in mum's tummy and let the baby understand or listen to the voice so she knows your voice when she comes out or he comes out.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. And how do you find that men react to that?
They think it's a bit strange, but once they actually think about it and understand what I'm trying to say to them, because we talk a lot about bonding and connecting and all that sort of stuff in one of the sessions. So for them to hear that and understand and go back and, you know, rub mum's tummy and talk to baby, because we also go on the other side of that, they can hear if dad's yelling or abusing or there's loud music and all that sort of stuff too. So we look at it both ways,
Yeah, because certainly I think there was some research I read a while ago, last year I think it was, around at the very point of conception as the little developing baby is heading down the fallopian tubes, they receive chemical messages from the mother letting them know what sort of environment they're coming into. And so yes. What, in terms of epigenetics, what they need to do to protect themselves or become more resilient or to be able to deal with extra stresses. So I think, you know, adding that extra layer into getting dads to start trying to create, you know, be maybe mindful around what they're saying around Bubby.
Yeah, and that's right. And, you know, we all want safe and calm environments for our children. So, you know, not yelling and not swearing and not partying, because the baby will bounce around with the music if they get used to it after long enough. So, you know, and keeping mum in a calm, relaxed state while she's during pregnancy.
Yeah.
It forms a really nice safety barrier for the children, yeah.
And so talk me through the program, because I find this fascinating. So this is my jam. I really love this sort of stuff. So when do dads come into the program? Is it when mum's, you know, 12 weeks pregnant or?
No, Danielle. They can come in after they've had kids.
Right.
I've even had men in that haven't even had children. So it's not to do with Carvel's clients either. The program's developed for people that are using mainstream doctor services or psychologists or mm-hmm. anything like that. They can refer into the program.
Oh, excellent. That's just in the Darling Downs or Toowoomba area?
Darling Downs and Warwick at this stage.
Excellent.
Southern Downs. So I get a lot of referrals from probation and parole and child safety, Danielle, believe it or not, because when I first developed this program, I went knocking on their doors because I understood what men are needing or confronting them in their everyday life in this community.
Mm.
So they were the two big players that I went and knocked on their door and sat down with the whole team and showcased this program. So they refer nearly every day, all day now.
Wow.
So it's to do with dads. It's also, like I said, if they haven't got children, I'm sure they're uncles to their nephews or nieces, and maybe they even care for some children, you know, as their journey goes on. At the start, it was a six-week program, Danielle, and then Carvel in 2016 went in partnership with the Community Justice through the Murray Court System. So any of the guys that got caught for doing any wrong behaviours and had to go to court, they'd actually go to mainstream court first and plead guilty to get into the Murray Court System. So the Murray Court gives them 3 months to show change. And we went in partnership because this Strong Fathers, I think, can help a lot of men and a lot of young fellows make a change in their lives. So I'll give you a few statistics.
Sure.
Since 2016, September, I've had 85 blokes be referred through. 10 haven't engaged, which is fair enough, so they get referred back to the mainstream courts. But the other 75, 3 have reoffended, and the rest of them haven't been sent back to jail. So they're all out, walking strong and proud again.
Oh, that is amazing.
It is amazing.
So that is just 85 just referred from the courts. That's a very good rate, isn't it?
Yeah, well, especially when you look at how much it costs to keep a prisoner in jail for 12 months, you know, it's a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah.
So, and you times that by 70-odd, I think I've saved the government heaps of money.
Yes.
And I've also saved families, you know, the heartache of somebody being in jail like throughout the child's life and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Charlie, this is so cool, mate. So my brain is just going 100 miles an hour. It's great. So obviously, this is something that's a holistic viewpoint or health for the clientele, for the men. So you're looking at all aspects: cultural, spiritual, emotional, mental, and physical health. Can you just tell me, so if someone gets referred to you, is it one-to-one or they do group work or is it a combination of everything?
Once I get a referral, usually on with a referral, it states what issues they have concerns with, whoever the person's referring. So if it's through the Murray Court, I usually do a one-on-one interview at the start before they come into the program. That's just to let them know what CARBL Medical Service is all about, what the program's all about, and if they got any questions or how they feel. A lot of people or some men have anxiety about talking about their issues in front of other people. So I can do one-on-one. I just graduated one fellow who we just done one-on-one in my office. But it's usually between 8 to 10 blokes I have in a group.
Right.
So I let them know that. And I conform it down to 8 to 10 because I feel I can do a lot more work individually in the group environment, if you know what I mean, personal. It's quite up to the participant, Danielle.
Mm-hmm. So how do you find the fellas go in that sort of group environment? Like, do they feel a bit shame sometimes? Or obviously they might know each other or might have heard of each other. I mean, how does that work in a small community as well?
Yeah, well, growing up in this community, I know all the families that used to, not get on. So I've got to be very conscious of who I bring in.
Yes.
And sometimes I ring these guys and say, look, I know you had issues with this fellow back in the day. How are you now? No, we were good. It's all water under the bridge. So they come along. The first session, I think they're a bit shame and a bit nervous. But after that, they're looking to come back. They're messaging me, ringing me, saying, is it on today? Is it on next week? And all that sort of stuff. So, and the program, you know, it's there to give them a bit of education and direction of how to become a good role model and dad. But it's also in the background secretly working to make these fellows support each other.
Yes. Perfect.
You know, so they exchange phone numbers and go for coffees and it really gives me a break too because they can ring each other.
Yeah, so a bit of peer group support or support amongst the peers I think is really beautiful. Say if you've got a group of fellas and they start up and they do your first session and then do they meet weekly for 6 weeks? 12 weeks?
Yeah, it was 6 weeks. And like I said, when we come in partnership with Murray Court, there was a lot of DVs coming through, DVOs and breaches of DVOs, domestic violence orders. So I actually went to the library a couple of years ago and I was showcasing a program that they call Me Dad, Can a Violent Man Change? So I went and watched that, and it's about a program in Victoria where they have a 16-week program to deal with perpetrators of domestic violence. So I went to our CEO, Brian Hewitt, to see if we could purchase this DVD, and we did. So that's actually the first session now.
Right.
So they see it from a perpetrator's point of view. They also see it from a victim's point of view. There's a lot of self-care around because if these blokes aren't actually doing DV, they might have been brought up in DV.
Yes.
So we've got to take self-care of each other, and I explain that to them. So that's the kickoff. That's where we start the program.
So that must be quite, confronting, I suppose, for people who are perpetrators of domestic violence who mightn't actually realise or, you know, We know some evidence around domestic violence that people are, you know, reacting to stresses in their life. And so when they see the impact of that on victims, you know, what's the response been in your group?
I've asked, you know, after the DVD's been played, I asked them, they said, oh, look, you know, I feel bad because I know I've done that. To actually see somebody else saying it.
Mm.
So I think for them to actually hear from somebody else what they've actually done, you know, really hits home.
Mm.
And a lot of them, you know, you can actually see their mind rolling around in their head and their heads down and they go quiet, they don't make eye contact after it.
Yep.
So that body language tell me straight away that they've been involved or they are a perpetrator. So I don't go singling them out. I just ask a question that covers everybody and we go from there, yeah.
And is it difficult to bring them back, to bring them back into the group to re-engage?
No, it's been quite surprising, Danielle. They, like I said before, they want to come back after the first session because I think it's an outlet for them. If they've been with their partners and it's 24/7 with their partners all the time, they actually realise, hey, it's good to come and have a yarn to a fella or some fellas that actually going through what I've gone through and I've got through it.
Yeah.
So they can get advice off them guys too.
And do you go out to sacred sites, or do you take the men out to men's business places or anything like that?
We go out to Gumanguru, which is an initiation, men's initiation place in Meringa down here. It was a place.
It's a good pub there, Meringa Gang. Yes. I've been there for a cannery.
It's lovely food, eh? Back in the day, all the men, and there's actually a women's sacred site too out at Highfields. But back in the day, before the Bunyan Mountain festival started, everybody used to congregate here and initiate the young boys into men, and they'd all walk up to the Bunyan Mountain festival. So, and there's a few other sacred sites like Maltugra and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
So that would be a very significant place to take men back who are sort of reclaiming their manhood or what it means to be a man, to take them back to that space, I think, where their generations before them have become men.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that we do talk a lot about culture to our men because being an Aboriginal man, when I go back to my own country where my mob's from, I feel really relaxed and I feel like a sense of belonging there. So a lot of our men and young children don't know where they're from or what mob they're from, so it's really good to connect them with their families and find out where they're from so they do feel like they belong somewhere, That's really important for the mindset and the mental health side of things, is getting these guys back, connected back to country.
Oh, absolutely. 100% agree. There's been lots of studies and research around the idea of connecting to country and how important it is for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Yeah.
So I'm just interested a little bit more if we could ask you a couple more questions around the domestic violence stuff. So we have... that's been very big in the media lately, and we know the statistics are quite horrifying. But what I've noticed is that there's quite a lack of helping people with their change, like the perpetrators. They always end up in the watch house, or as you said, they're reoffending. But there's no real way to help them out of that cycle. So what do you guys do with your strong fathers specifically?
And the key word that you just said, Danielle, was cycle. Around domestic violence and all drug and alcohol use, these fellas have probably grew up with domestic violence and drug and alcohol, so they see mum and dad doing it and they think it's a normal thing.
Yep.
And that's a cycle they're in. They think it's a normal thing, so they do it to their partners and their children. And I'm there to say, okay, boys, this is not the normal thing. The normal thing is to communicate with your partner in a nice, calm way, connect and bond with your children. What I do with the guys with the domestic violence, I have two sets of programs I look at in the book. The first one is the Four Corners program. So it looks at stress and symptoms of stress. So the four corners, you've got mental, you've got emotional, you've got social, and you've got physical.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about when they're under stress, what signs or symptoms do you get mentally? You might get headaches, you might get,
Sore belly,
yeah, loss of appetite, all that sort of stuff. Then we go into the emotional side. You might feel sad, you might feel angry, you might feel disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
and so on and so on. So once we identify their symptoms, we actually go into it again and say, okay, how are you going to manage those signs and symptoms?
Yeah.
So that may be, you know, going for a walk or writing down your feelings or having a yarn to somebody and stuff like that.
Is that something that is it like a worksheet that you go through with each person and they can self-identify and say, yep, this is what I'm going to do to look after myself when I'm feeling that way?
Yeah, so it's in the book that I give these guys and I ask them individually, you know, what some of the signs or symptoms you get when you're under stress mentally. Mm-hmm. So we actually go around a group and they talk it out loud, and then I go back after that and say, well, okay, Danielle, how are you going to manage it? What are you going to do? Tell me how you're going to manage it when you feel these symptoms coming on.
Mm-hmm.
So put them writing it down and actually thinking about it, it actually sinks into them.
Yep, and then are they actually doing it?
Like, yeah.
Fantastic. God, I wish my patients were that good.
I had one fella actually come back and say, Charlie, when we discuss this, me and my partner discuss this, and they said, well, when we get angry now, we feel like we're going to fight, what we're going to do is both of us walk away, we're going to take our phones, and we're going to message to each other how we're feeling and what the issues are. And then they're going to come back after that and see it from both point of view and talk it out.
That is so fantastic to help them calm down, remain cool-headed, and to be able to think logically about, okay, what's really, you know, pissing me off or getting to me at this particular stage.
Yeah, well, you have a thing called the knee-jerk reaction, don't we?
Mm, exactly.
You know, and we talk a lot about knee-jerk reaction and how knee-jerk reaction can have a better outcome if you're calm and you think about what your actions are going to be either way you go, you know, if you're angry or you're calm.
Mm.
Following on to that, we identify triggers that make them angry. So we talk a lot about their triggers. And once the guys identify their triggers, then we can move on to the traffic light system where I don't know if people have heard of the traffic light system, but you got your red light, you got your amber light, and you got your green light.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell the guys, I give them a piece of paper and got all the information on it. So once we've identified the triggers, I say, okay, now you feel, you know your triggers, you know you're going to get angry once some triggers have been pulled. What I want you to do is use a red light and stop. That's all you got to do.
Yep.
Just stop. Don't say nothing. Don't do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Just stop in your tracks. Then after you stop, use the amber light to go for a walk. I always say walking because it lets the endorphins out. After a 30-minute walk, you feel a lot calmer. You see the argument in a better light, I suppose you can say. And while you're walking, I want you to think about, okay, now they've pulled that trigger, how am I going to deal with it? I'm not angry, I'm going for a walk, I'm going to come back and try and do it in a calmer way. So once I've identified what they need to do in a calmer way, the green light is come and put it back into action and see how that works for them.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So do you it's just blowing my mind, and that's some really good strategies, I think, for GPs to start looking at using as well, like helping people identify. You know, I really like that four corners thing, and obviously the traffic lights, you know, are very good and can be used in a lot of different situations. So, Charlie, what happens at the end of your 7-week program?
Danielle, after the 7-week program, I actually organise a graduation for the men that's finished the program. I think it's a good way of making them feel that they've achieved something.
Mm.
And when you look at it, they really have, you know. They've come to a men's program, which is very hard for men to accept and even attend.
Mm.
So that's acknowledgement on its own. But, you know, I see changes in these guys throughout the program, which really makes me satisfied that these guys are going to go on the right path now. So what I do is, because within the program I pick these guys up, so there's no barriers, no, if they haven't got transport, stiff buggery, because I pick them up, I provide lunch. So my job's actually done then. So I organise a barbecue. They invite their partners, their children, their grandmothers, their grandfathers, whoever they want to invite along.
Yeah.
And they actually prepare the food. They cook the food.
Oh.
And then they serve their partners.
That is children. That's lovely. That's so beautiful.
And some of the smiles on their faces, it's just, it tells it all, you know. It's just amazing.
And I think you're right, Charlie. A lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people mightn't actually have completed some things. So, you know, high school, or you might start a certificate at TAFE, but it's, you know, for different reasons you can't complete it. So being able to, by being in something that's so anchored in culture, and allowing yourself to be vulnerable, like stepping into that space and allowing yourself to be vulnerable, and then having those big transitions and changes, and then coming out and identifying yourself as a strong father is such an amazing thing within the community.
Yeah, it is, Danielle. And to go with the barbecue, I actually do a certificate up of completion or graduation, and I ask the boys, you know, what do you want on there? Do you want a photo of your kids and your missus, or do you just want the strong father logo on there? And I do this certificate up because I think it's to reinforce what they've just done and who they identified as a person they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Is to have it framed. I frame it. I present it to them at the graduation with a strong father shirt and a bag. But I also really enforce that, you know, this certificate, you need to be proud of it, yes, but you need to hang it somewhere where you walk past every second of the day and you're going to look at it just to make sure that you stay focused, you know. And a lot of them do that. They hang it over their TV, they hang it in their hallway or lounge room and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm blown away. Now, Charlie, we know that program successes are sometimes linked to connections to elders. So do you have any elders that come and hang out, or do your participants get access to elders?
Yeah. When I first started the program, Danielle, the participants I got to engage in the first couple of programs was young males, you know, 16 to 24. Then middle-aged guys, 24 on to 35 or something, then elders. Because when you look at it, our elders have been through some stuff that, you know, I can't even comprehend. So to have them strong elders there talking with these young'uns, putting the respect back in these young fellas, and also telling them what they've been through, it sort of makes these young fellas think, oh, wow, you know, we are strong, we need to be strong again. So to elders to give these guys a bit of education also, but for the young fellas to learn. I actually have a Uncle Colin Jones who comes along to every program I run now. He's actually on our board, but he comes back, he speaks 11, 12 different languages, and he's gone through all that sort of stuff, you know, and he comes along and just helps me reinforce what it was like in the day for our ancestors to what it is now.
Mm.
And the boys really appreciate that, because I'm trying to teach them how we've got to learn to be a dad in this environment.
Yeah.
And he's actually showing them what it was like to be a dad and child back in the day, you know what I mean? So,
and he's a great painter too.
He is a great painter, and he's a great talker.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. I can put the link to Uncle Colin in the show notes as well. Oh, true.
Yeah. Yes.
I just wanted to carve his name into my arm when I, like a tattoo. It was just, it just blew my mind. So
he's a very knowledgeable man.
Oh, my goodness me. So do you do any artwork or painting with your men, or is it just yarning?
Yarning
and eating.
Yeah, yarning and eating. And in the new year, the artwork and that's going to happen, because we've just moved into a building that's got a big shed at the back where I'm going to start a men's shed.
Fantastic. I was going to ask you, what are your dreams for the program? So the men's shed.
Men's cave.
Yes. What are you going to do with
the man? Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. What are you going to do in the man shed? You're going to, woodwork, sanding stuff.
Yeah, we're going to. My idea is it's going to be all cultural, bar some mechanic stuff. So I want the guys to work on mowers or whippersnippers.
Yes.
But when they're working on that, I want a young fellow beside them, like a kid at school, maybe having some issues or maybe not. But to have a strong father that's done the program, who's been through the justice system and all that sort of stuff, to say, okay, young fella, you know, you're at the crossroads now. This is the way I went and ended up here, but now I'm here. So if you take this other way, you can be me now without going through all that other stuff.
Perfect. What a great, beautiful vision.
Yeah, that's my passion and that's my vision. I will have Uncle Colin here. He's volunteering his time to be here as a mentor, also to talk cultural. But I'm going to be making didgeridoos and boomerangs and koolamons and doing art. Uncle Colin's going to teach him art.
Oh, goodness.
And also, we've got a spiritual healer coming in. So we're going to do that spiritual side as well.
Fantastic. Charlie, I've got two more questions for you, and thank you so much for your time so far. First question is, why is this a passion for you? I can hear it in your voice, and I know you're a good, solid fella. You know, not just your height, but you've got it. I can feel it in your, you know, soul and spirit that this is, you know, something that's really important. Is there a reason why, or can you share?
Danielle, I left school when I was 14, so halfway through grade 9. And through my working career, I've had good people looking after me, not Indigenous, they're white fellas, and they really took me under their wing and made me, and with my background and growing up too, made me who I was. And I was at this manufacturing place, and I was there nearly 10 years, and I was thinking, I'm getting too old for this, and I sort of want to give back to community what I've received. And then I applied for a job at Carbon in the mental health, and I sort of thought, yep, this is right. And to be honest, when I moved into the role of Strong Fathers program, I didn't think it was going to get as big as it is. And it sort of helped me grow into what I'm actually doing now. But my passion is our mob. Our history is sad and sorry, but there is a lot of lovely parts about our culture. I struggled growing up as a kid with racism and all that sort of stuff. And I just want our men and our Indigenous peoples to have a voice, I suppose, and the way they can have a voice is walking strong and proud and, you know, fitting into society as they should. What can I say? I just love my culture. I love my mob. I appreciate where everybody comes from. And if I can make a difference, I will make a difference. Like I say to everybody, I don't come to work to work, Danny. I'll come to work to get some deadly outcomes.
Beautiful. And you certainly are. And I know that we're so keen to get started with our cultural mentoring stuff for our GPTQ registrars.
Yeah.
But I understand also you're doing some cultural mentoring for little kiddies in kindergarten and school children. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, well, my title says it all. I am the Community Outreach Manager, so I see myself as the face of Carbon. And like I said before, you know, I don't want any racism in this world. I want everybody to understand how beautiful our culture is. So I go to kindergartens, Danielle. I've got 6 on the go at the moment, so I visit them once a month.
Yep.
And I take in art, I take in finger knives from the old days, stone axes. I teach them language, and then we go back and do a crossword puzzle with that language in it. And, you know, there's a lot of government ages out there that are totemistic, and a lot of these childcare centres aren't. You know, they've got the flags up, how good it is when you hear a little non-Indigenous person going home and acknowledging country to the mum and dad.
Yeah, I know.
How amazing is that? You know, and that's what it's all about.
Fantastic. So you're doing some great work in the community, Charlie. I can't commend you enough, and I just think you're an amazing, deadly man. And I'd love to thank you so much for sharing your passion with us. I've certainly learned a lot of things, particularly around some strategies for change behaviour and perpetrators.
And I
love the fact that GPs up in the Darling Downs area are able to get everyone to join that your Strong Fathers program, but you'll probably get inundated now because you're too good. You're too deadly.
Too good.
Too deadly.
Too deadly.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's fine if they want to refer. I really ask. There's one thing I don't know if you know, but when they refer, why I ask is what their issues are. Is that, you know, I don't want to single these guys out and bring it up in front of everybody, but if they message me that they got DV or they got drug and alcohol use or very angry, well, I can incorporate it into the program without them even knowing, because I think it's just part of the program.
Yeah, perfect.
How easy is that, you know?
It's perfect.
So, and you know how people don't like to be judged, so I don't judge them, because if I judged them, I wouldn't have anybody. I'd be jobless.
Jobless. Well, we don't want that, Charlie. You've got a job with GPTQ, at least for next year. But
thank you.
So thank you so much for your time, Charlie. I know you've got to dash off to see one of your clients now. So I wish you all the very best and good luck.
No doubt
we'll be hearing about your greatness and the work you're doing, on a bigger level.
On a bigger level, let's hope so. And thank you for taking the time out to interview me and listening to my passion and what I do.
Thank you, Charlie. Now, Charlie, we're going to put some show notes up for everyone to be able to contact. Not to contact you directly, but to learn some information about the project and the program and how they can get their people onto it. I also put Uncle Colin's videos up as well, so people can learn about how amazing he is as well.
Yeah, if they really want to. Get involved with Indigenous health or the Indigenous community or culture, tell them to look up Uncle Colin's videos on YouTube there.
Yeah.
It'll explain everything.
Too deadly. We're all too good.
We all too good.
All right. You take care.
Thank you, Danielle. Okay. You too.
Okay. Thank you, love. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe and check out our YouTube channel, Indigenous Health Med Talk. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative, supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.